This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 108. In this episode, CJ and I will look back at 2015 and see how we did with our predictions for the cloud in 2015, recorded live December the 23rd, 2015. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it. Good morning, CJ. How are you?
I am awesome, thank you. Very good. I might sound a little scratchy, but I feel excellent.
You sound fine. So all rested and recovered and everything from your nice little vacation to Mexico?
I don't know about recovered, but definitely rested. Yeah. So we were down there about 11 nights, 12 days or so, and down in Ixtapa in Mexico, and it was just totally glorious. Like, it's brilliant. I had a birthday party down there and amongst the holiday slash vacation. So it was awesome. I had a great time.
That's awesome. So, hey, let's last time there was a debate about a passport. So obviously you got your passport. Do you want to just fill people in on what happened at the last minute on you?
Oh, man. Yeah. So my passport did get made in time and my friend picked it up in New Zealand and went to go get on the plane to come to the States, and they canceled this flight.
So of all the work that had to be done, the one thing that had to, that you had no control over, or that you know you couldn't impact or anything, yeah, boom.
Went wrong. Yep. So, of course, by this stage, I was just, like, laughing. Like, it was just completely comical at this point because, you know, of course it was going wrong, right? Of course. So anyway, he caught the next flight that he could, and it turned out that arrived about an hour and a half after my flight to Mexico took off. And so we were in LA for a day, and but don't worry, we made use of it. We went and saw space shuttle, went up to the Getty Center in LA, hung out, and it was really fun. So we made use of the extra day in LA, but I finally did get to Mexico.
That's awesome, man. Well, the trip looked absolutely awesome. Looked like a lot of fun. The pictures that you guys were posting on Facebook were pretty cool. But, you know, hey, happy birthday. Glad you're back. I'm glad you had a nice, we took a nice break from the podcast and from everything else. So
Yeah. It was an excellent break and a great way to spend a birthday. So I'm very lucky.
Awesome, man. Awesome.
Yeah. How about you? What have you been up to?
It's been lots of little stuff. I've wrapped up like one big milestone to a project. I'm working on a course for Microsoft on an API that with the group outside of Azure, outside of Office, it's with the partner group, and taught a little class on that up in Seattle. So that went well. That's just one of the projects I was working on. And from a personal side of it too, I've kind of almost gone this way, but I need to need one or two more inspections and an install, but I'm going solar, man. I got solar panels put on my roof of my house.
Yeah, that looks awesome. I saw a post of your house on Facebook. It looks amazing.
Yeah, they look great. Everything that has to be installed and configured and everything is done. And I had three milestones that I have to get past. So one is I had to have a building inspector for the county look at everything, make sure it was cool, and make sure that I got what I paid for, which that happened this morning. I'm now waiting for the local electric authority to show up and to do an electrical inspection of all the work they did, and to also install a new meter on my house so that the meter will roll the other direction, will roll backwards.
Yep.
I can sell electricity back to the electric authority when I'm creating a surplus. So it's just sitting here. Now, this is the hard part, because now I have nothing else to do but just sit around and wait. And once that's done, once these guys show up, I just flip a pair of breakers, flip a couple of cutoffs outside, turn the two inverters on, wait for a few seconds, and then click two little buttons to say, yes, start doing it. So
it's going to be awesome to have done, man.
Oh, man, it is. And, you know, one side, December's the worst month. December, January, the worst month for generating power from solar. But May is the best one. So I'm looking forward to kind of seeing when that goes. But
yeah,
that's cool.
So you're going to be able to power your electric car off the power of the sun.
Exactly. It's
very cool.
It's very cool. But
I look forward to seeing how it goes.
Hey, man, we have one geek out thing that we got to do before we do this.
Oh, I know what you're going to bring up.
Oh, hell yeah. So was it two nights ago? SpaceX launched.
Stuck the landing.
They stuck the landing. So they shot off a Falcon 9 rocket. They separated stage one, stage two. Stage two continued to go up into space, into orbit, and to deploy 11 Orbcomm satellites. That was constitutes successful mission. But I think the part that they're getting all the press for is that stage one did an about flip,
yep,
shot up a little bit higher, came back down, let gravity pull it back down, and it landed back upright at Cape Canaveral on land.
It is a incredible feat of engineering.
It is nuts.
Amazing. I don't know how you go from turning something around that's traveling at 5,000 kilometers an hour to back in the opposite direction. I mean, I know how they do it, mm-hmm, but, you know, the maths and the engineering is mind-boggling, and at least to me.
It is to me, too.
And then take it all the way back, get it to land horizontally, vertically upright on legs that pop out or fold down, and not just end up in a big fiery ball of mess.
Not only that, I mean, it's doing it with just very short control, too. I mean, when you look at the pictures, you know, they had three burns that they had,
yeah,
coming back down. So they had the one burn after the separation, and two kind of stage two took off. Stage one, they fired off three. They did an about flip, and they fired three of the nine engines on the back to slow it down and to change the trajectory of it. And it sent it up at a higher altitude and just kind of let it get this big parabolic arc and let gravity take a hold of it.
Ballistic trajectory.
Yeah. And when so the crazy thing was, is it was going to, the trajectory, they had it start coming back to where it would have crash landed in the ocean off the coast of Cape Canaveral. But once it got to a certain point, if everything looked good, it fired the engines again and started to slow it down and angle it back over land. So they had a way, it was originally destined to ditch itself in the ocean.
I see. That's a good safety measure.
Yeah. And yeah, they could have an additional thing that could change and say, nope, we're going to land it. But, you know, it's amazing. This company, it's a private company, privately funded, no public funding. They've gotten public contracts, but not publicly funded. They started in 2010, first launch. The first three launches, they failed, blew up their rockets. They had just enough money for one more launch. Successful launch, and on for the fourth launch, they went 20 straight launches with no problem. They lost one this past June, so now they're at launch number 24. They lost number one, number two, number three, number 24, and then launch number 25. They stuck the landing in just five years. That's pretty damn impressive.
It's incredible, really.
Yeah. So
incredible.
If you haven't seen it, go check out the videos on YouTube. They're all over the place. And go check out the SpaceX account on Flickr. They've got some badass HD pictures on there.
Definitely. I look forward to watching them stick a whole bunch more landings.
I'm looking forward to going down there. It was too strong cloud cover at my house and didn't get a chance to see it fully. But I could see it on its way up two or three times poking through the clouds.
There you go. It's cloud related.
There you go. Cloud ready. Hey, last time we talked, we did an episode on Docker. And
yes,
we did a little Docker intro. And hey, to all of our listeners, awesome feedback that came back. It was good to hear that from the majority of the feedback we got, it sounds like a lot. We answered a lot of people's questions on what Docker's all about and everything. So what we did get one question back from someone. Actually, we got two questions back from one individual. So Jasper Segman, I apologize if I just butchered your name, but hopefully it got close enough. But at any rate, I want to read out your question. It's kind of a two-part question. I want to let CJ take the first part, and then I'll take the second part. So let me read off the first part, and then I'll let CJ take it. So from Jasper, it says, hey guys, awesome show on Docker. I was in the same boat hearing all kinds of noise about Docker, but I never really got into finding out what it really is. From your description of the show, there's one thing I'm not quite clear on. You mentioned a container runs within the Docker environment living on a Linux host. So how does this work when your app depends on stuff that should be installed on the machine? For instance, you typically need something to host your web app, and you mentioned Node. That could be Apache or something similar, I suppose. Or you want to deploy a database somewhere that's typically needs some sort of engine to host it. Are those inside or outside the container? Does such software need to be, quote, container ready so that it can run sandboxed? So, CJ, let me let you answer this piece, and I'm going to continue this question in just a minute. I'll take the second piece.
Yeah, sure. So the really short answer is it runs inside the container, and it doesn't have to be container ready per se. So basically what you do is you start from a base container. So say it was a Ubuntu container, and you needed to install Apache, right? So you'd go in and in your Docker file, which says, how do you want to build your container? You say, what is it based on? So it would be based on Ubuntu. And then what do you want to do within that? And one of those steps that you do within that would be install Apache, configure it, do all that sort of stuff.
All from the command line.
All from the command line, yeah. So you go and install Apache, you configure it and all that sort of stuff. And then your container is packaged, but it's only a diff from the underlying container that you based your container on. So it's only a diff from what the Ubuntu container that you said you were basing your image on. So it might only be, you know, 5 meg or 100 meg or 200 meg or whatever it happens to be. But it's basically it is a new image. And when you run that, it's just like another Linux box running. And so your Apache app or host or whatever you want to run inside that container runs within that container just like it would on a regular machine. So you can go and install anything you want in there. That could be Apache, or it could be, you also mentioned databases. You could deploy a Postgres instance this way, for example, or Mongo or something like that inside one of those containers and run it. And the idea is that it doesn't have to be, there's no such thing as container ready per se. If it runs on Ubuntu, then it runs on your base image and you'll be good to go. So you don't have to do anything special there. It's just like as if you were working within a virtual machine, except some of the resources are shared between the container and the host to make it super lightweight. But yeah, you install stuff inside your container.
Again, like CJ is saying too, that let's say if you're talking about a database, you could be using a hosted database solution as well. Like you could be using like SQL Azure or something like that. It doesn't have to be, yep. or Redis. I mean, I know there's a Redis cache Docker image that you can use, which is your own install of Redis that you babysit, you water, you feed, and all that kind of stuff. But then you can also say, no, I just want to write the application and use a hosted Redis service like at AWS or at Amazon. Or at Azure.
Yeah. Actually, one final point on this is in the database case or something that has data that persists, right, so that you want to store it like a database or something along those lines, the next question you're probably going to ask is how do you keep that data? And you do that by mounting volumes from the host into the container so that when they write files or when they write, you know, database logs or what have you, it can go into a disk or a volume that persists even when your container goes away and then maybe spins back up later and it's got access to that volume again. And so in the Azure world, your host is the virtual machine, the Ubuntu virtual machine running in Azure, and you'd mount a volume from that into your containers. And then, of course, that volume on the host is probably a VHD that's mounted into the virtual machine that ultimately resides in Azure Blob Storage. So that's how it's all persistent from the bottom of the stack up to the top.
So let me continue on with the second part of this question. So Jesper continues to saying, I'm trying to think about how this would work in a Windows environment if Microsoft is doing it. In a Windows server, you would normally have a single instance of IIS, not multiple. So I cannot see that this going into a container. I can also not see how this container would leverage it without running into problems with containers interfering with each other and all kinds of nasty dependency stuff. Maybe it's wrong to map this into today's Microsoft technology, as the concept doesn't exist there yet, but that always helps me translate into something I know well. Again, awesome work, and thanks for making my commute sort of worthwhile.
Nice.
So let me tackle the second part of your question. One thing that I we kind of explained, but let me just explain a little bit more, is that today, in a production sense, containers are all based on Linux. On Linux. So when you've got the core Linux operating system, whether that be CentOS or Ubuntu or whatever you're using, when you create a container, that container is simply is a Linux container, and that's going to be using the shared resources and the shared things that Linux would normally provide you, or that Ubuntu or CentOS is going to provide you. So if you're using Node, you're building a Node application, or you're building something in, say, like the .NET cross-platform stuff that you can take advantage of.
Yeah, gotcha.
All that stuff is still going to run in a Linux environment. So what Microsoft is doing is Microsoft is working on on container technology, which will be compatible with Docker. The difference they're trying to do is that when you create a container on top of Windows, it's a Windows container. And so you could do traditional .NET stuff. You could do IIS stuff. You could host things that you're used to hosting. It doesn't have to be Linux-based stuff or cross-platform-based stuff. This is what's going to be coming in the Windows Server 2016 version, which right now is just in a preview state. And there's also the container service that CJ and I talked a little bit about in the last episode. So that when I create a container, it will be a Windows-based container. Now, the part that Microsoft is doing now is they're making it so that you can have a website that's running via IIS. It's all localized inside that container. It's still using the IIS engine inside of Windows from the host container, but it's not, you won't be competing with different resources. Everything that's running inside that one container will be isolated to that one container and not from another Windows container that's running on the same machine. There may be even a more core container that Microsoft provides too off Windows that doesn't have IIS installed on it. So you would have, say, one container that's just core Windows. You'd have another container that's based on that, or another image that's based on that core image that adds IIS. And then you'd have yet another one that is your custom application. And you maybe have four or five different images that are all based off of that same IIS image,
yep.
Right? So an image being just a template, and containers are just instances of those templates. When these things fire up too, the one thing that I heard described since we talked about it last was that, you know, when you fire up a container, you think about it as saying, from doing it in the Docker sense, I'm saying Docker run, I give it the name of the image that I want to spin up. So again, that's like the template, and that's one template, and then it can be based on a bunch of different images. It will spin up a container, but then I tell it the next thing is, what do I do? What does that container do? Because it's going to run a process. That's seen as process ID 1, PID 1. When that process is finished, that's what causes the container to shut down. So when I say, go run this website, if the website ever terminates or crashes, that container spins down. There's things to keep it up and running.
Yeah.
So hopefully that answers your question, Jesper, about the how things are kind of stacked and installed and all that stuff. And then also the difference between Windows and Linux containers. I definitely would recommend, if you want to go deeper on this, there's a Docker deep dive or container deep dive course by a guy named Nigel Poulton on Pluralsight. He goes like super deep into this stuff, but it's a good class that you can kind of start listening to it, get some questions answered. You can quickly see where he starts to kind of dive really deep, and you can jump over those parts if you're just looking for a bit of an overview. But hopefully this helped, and hopefully the last episode helped you as well.
Yeah, thanks for the question.
Cool. Well, hey, CJ, about a year ago, there's a bunch of news that's gone on recently, but I guess we're going to have to catch up on this stuff at some point. But, you know, we're winding down the end of the year here. I think that, you know, we did a couple predictions at the end of last year. So what do you think it's about time that we kind of look back at our predictions that we had last year and kind of see how we did on those three or four different predictions that we did? And then I think in a future episode or in the next episode, why don't we look at, say, looking forward to 2016 and maybe doing part of a prediction episode and maybe part of, you know, maybe a wish list.
Wish list. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the wish list idea more. The prediction stuff is kind of...
Yeah, let's try doing doing the wish list, right? Because it's a bit more... It's a bit more optimistic.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So in this one, why don't we start it off first? Let's look at what our predictions were last year. So why don't you list off what your three predictions were last year?
Okay. So episode 65 was the show where we did this, which was last December. And it feels like an eternity ago. So I went back and listened to it. And looked at our predictions. And some of them were pretty good. Like, I was kind of surprised. I mean, I shouldn't be so pessimistic, right? But I was kind of surprised about how on the money some of this stuff was. So my predictions were, I had three. Cloud price wars slow down. Apple Watch is a moderate success. And year of the cord cutter. So yeah, those were my three.
All right. So let's kind of poke through these three. So first one, price wars slow down. So what do you think? Do you think the price wars kind of slowed down a little bit as far as the cloud price wars go?
I think... there's definitely been price wars, right? Like there's definitely been pricing updates and stuff, but we're not seeing it at the frequency that we were the year before, I think.
Agreed.
I mean, there's been price movements, of course, but it doesn't seem like the year before we had like Azure announcing something and AWS following a week later and then Azure following a week after that and then, you know, sort of stepwise price wars. And I think we've kind of not bottomed out, but we've gotten over the most of like differentiation through price.
Yeah, agreed.
There doesn't seem to be as much wiggle room left in that. So, yeah.
Good job, man. You got one there.
I see what you're doing. I was like, is this an awkward pause or is it? Ta-da!
It was an awkward pause.
There we go.
All right. So what about your second one? The Apple Watch was a moderate success.
Yeah, I think this is a bit more subjective, right?
Very subjective, yeah.
It's probably a bit harder to score, but I would say, you know, on the plus side for me, I would say it hasn't been a blowout success, right? So I wouldn't say that, you know, everybody I see walking around the streets is wearing an Apple Watch like they're carrying iPhones. So I guess since it's not a blowout success, you could call it a moderate success because it hasn't completely tanked.
Yeah.
I think they're shipping a bunch of units. There was a lot of scarcity early on. It's still very much a V1, but yeah, I'd say it's been reasonably successful for them, but not a blowout success.
Yeah, it's not a, I guess by Apple standards, it was not a, I wouldn't say it was too much of a success.
Yeah.
But it, I mean, as far as a new product launch, a V1, it seems pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah. So it's, to me, I'm not a big fan of the device. The people around me, I'd say 3 out of 4 people around me that got them have been either disappointed or returned them. But there's the 25% around me that do have them. They do really like them. I know my cousin and his wife have them. They absolutely love them. They're the 2 people I know that do absolutely love them. But I know of a few people that some of our friends that have gotten them that have turned around and tried to sell them on eBay or whatever. It just wasn't what they were looking for. So
yeah.
Anyway, so okay, what we'll score this. I'll give you a 1 for the price wars because you got that one right.
Yep.
The Apple Watch moderate success. That's kind of, what do you think? A 1, 1.5, or a half? What do you think?
I think it's probably a half. Yeah.
A half. Okay.
Because I definitely think it's probably been more successful than I expected. So
yeah, there you go.
And then the third one.
Your third one is the year of the cord cutter.
Yeah. Maybe I was a little overzealous on this one. Like, I think my point was with HBO going to being able to subscribe to TV services outside of cable, it's gotten a lot better, but I don't think it's gotten completely doable just yet.
No, I agree with you on that one. It's one of those things. It's the utopia that everyone's going for, but nobody's made it like stupid simple to go do. Nobody's made it Uber. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm about to cancel our basic cable service and just go to like Amazon, Netflix on our Roku box and Xbox and all that sort of stuff and give it a shot.
Yeah.
There's not much other than live sports. That's the only thing we'll have issues with.
And that's the big one for me is the live sports.
NFL are going to, and it's really live sports. I mean, NFL, right? So NFL are going to offer a streaming service.
Are they?
Shortly.
Mm.
Yeah, that's what I'd heard.
Be curious.
Anyway, that's my 3. Price wars, Apple Watch moderate success, year of the cord cutter. I would say I failed on the last one pretty badly.
Hmm.
So
you got 1.5.
I got 1.5, yeah.
1.5 out of 3 points. Okay.
Yep.
So I had 3. I had SharePoint Dev Legacy. So SharePoint development turns more like, that's going to start to kind of go away, the legacy kind of development.
Yeah.
Microsoft development is going to push more and more on open source.
Yep.
And it will have a rise in point solutions or like Kickstarter-based solutions.
Yeah, yeah. I actually thought yours were all pretty good. Like, I think...
At the time or now?
Now.
Yeah.
So SharePoint development becomes more legacy. I don't think you can argue that it hasn't gone that way more than it was a year ago.
Yeah, I think that we've seen more people working. I'm looking a bit through jaded eyes here, but I've seen more and more people start building things that are not so much quote unquote SharePoint solutions or Office 365 solutions. They're building more web applications that are tying into SharePoint or 365. They're not necessarily being forced to use farm solutions or the add-in model. They're building just web applications and they're registering through Azure AD. There's still a lot of SharePoint development being done. There's still a lot of native style development being done there.
Yep.
But I do see it more kind of pushing in the direction of kind of being more kind of a standard web dev kind of a thing.
Definitely the tools and the technologies they're using for sure. I still think they've got to know how to hook into SharePoint, how to hook into Office 365, where they can surface their apps, all that sort of stuff. So there's still some SharePoint-isms and Office-isms going on there.
Yeah.
But you didn't say it's going away entirely. You just say it'd become more legacy. There you go.
All right. So I got 1 on that
one. So your next one was Microsoft development becomes more open source friendly. Nailed it.
I'm not sure how I could have missed this one. I mean, recently you've got LiveWriter has been pushed out there.
Yep.
They've done a tremendous amount of work with .NET and pushing, making that open source.
And cross-platform ASP.NET or, the next version. So That's pretty cool.
Yeah, was it announced at Build, or was it just kind of put double down at Build?
I can't remember, actually.
It was a big focus of Build, but I can't remember if that was an announcement from Build.
Yeah.
I know Visual Studio Code, that was announced at Build, and since then, it's gone open source. So, yeah, you see that, you know, the Office 365 team is doing things like with the Yeoman generator and the Office UI fabric, that's all open source. So I think that, I mean, that one, there's definitely nothing going in the opposite direction of that. So
absolutely. Full point for you, sir. And then the third one was that point solutions and apps that are, you know, specifically built for a particular purpose, or things that are built, you know, and sourced through crowdsourced or crowdfunded through Kickstarter and things like that become much more prevalent. And so how do you think you went on that one?
I personally think I got that one pretty good too, because yeah. I think that we see more and more people, not only just developers and companies, not feeling like they have to go with giant integrated solutions,
yep,
but taking more point solutions and seeing providers being much more friendly and making themselves more available to these different point solutions. So things like, you see, like from the developer point of view, look at what the Visual Studio services or the Team Foundation services, look at what that's done, where the entire Build pipeline, you don't have to do stuff with just Visual Studio and Microsoft Stack. You can integrate with other tools. Mm. You can see that, you know, tools like Slack, they're all about an API and integrations. That's one of the biggest things that people love about Slack, is that all the integrations that are out there. I know for me as a developer, I've absolutely embraced that world, and I feel like I'm much more successful because of that. So
yeah, it's nice.
I feel like I kind of nailed that one as well.
And then things like Kickstarter, I think I've ordered 3 things off Kickstarter this last year, and it's what they've I've got one yet to be delivered. Oh, actually 2 yet to be delivered. One should be arriving very soon. So yeah, but definitely that's obviously become much more of a mainstream thing to do. It's, you know, back these things and watch them flourish. So
you give me that one?
Totally. Well done. So 1.5 points for me and 3 points for you. I think that's a clear win.
I think this is 2 years in a row for me, because I got you on the CEO as well,
yeah,
didn't I?
Yeah, yeah. Rub
that. I got you on the Microsoft CEO prediction. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. So I felt bad for you, and that's why I felt that we should kind of go more with wish lists instead of going with predictions for the next year. Because I figured,
best of 5? No, I'm gonna kill you.
Oh, best of 5. We can do predictions and that, but
no, that's no, well deserved.
It's cool to see the way that the business is going, the direction the business is going right now. I like the direction things are going. I love the pace how things are going. It's kind of crazy that it's crazy to me every year looking back at where we were, you know, 12 months ago and seeing where we are today. It's like, God dang, this is incredible how fast things are moving right now.
Right. Yeah.
How many things we didn't even fathom 12 months ago that are not only that are real today, that are not just concepts, but they're real today.
Yeah, it's nuts. The speed is picking up for sure.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
I love it.
Well, hey man, you want to call this a wrap for 2015?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's get together next show and talk about our wish list for the cloud.
Wish list for the cloud. We can definitely do it.
And maybe some news.
Maybe some news. Yeah, we got a boatload of stuff that's piled up from December. So we may even have to do a little quick news show and then do our prediction show. We should break those into 2.
That's a good call. Excellent.
Cool. There you go. Project planning right here on the fly, just for all of you guys to listen in on. So
yeah.
Happy New Year to everybody. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Every other religions, I don't know off the top of my head. You're not supposed to do this, but I did it anyway. Happy holidays.
It's only an issue here. Excellent.
Awesome.
All right. We're good on, man.
Yeah, man. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text. We'll record it as a WAVE or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.